You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey everybody, this is Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm.
Hey, what's up? This is Chadis from Hell Yeah and Mudvayne.
This is Ron Bumblefoot Fall.
Hey, this is Barbara Wild.
And this is Daniela Clark.
This is Johnny from Art of Dying.
Hey, this is Mixie from Stitched Up Heart.
Hey, this is Nick Reese from Joyous Bowl.
Hey, this is Josh from Bad Flower. Welcome aboard the ship making way. Fuck!
Hey, this is Ralph Sutton.
This is Aaron Jones.
What's going on, gang? Zach Wild here. And you're listening to Making Waves, the Shipwrecked Podcast.
Making Waves.
Hey, Shiprocked family and everyone out there on the internet and podcast land, thank you for joining us on another episode here, episode 54 of Making Waves, the Shiprocked podcast. We are part of the Sound Talent Media family and the fastest growing rock podcast in the world. We've had nearly 7,000 downloads this year alone, and our community is stronger and more involved than ever. Thank you so much for the support. Remember to review, rate, subscribe, and share. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, you can see that you can hear that I am, this is Al McManus. I'm filling in for the lovely and talented Justin Press, who is not with us. I'm here with Chad Nicefield and a guest who I will introduce to you here shortly. Chad Nicefield, which my Siri refers to him as Chad Niecefield, which
the
is
the one and only.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my favorite. So also, it sounds like you made Justin die. Justin,
I'm pinch hitting for Justin tonight. See, he's I think he's finishing up his master's degree at Barbizon, one of those things, you know. Wow, yeah, or like time. Yeah, like the Sally Struthers School of TV VCR repair.
We have to get way into Sally. I call my friend Struthers. That's our like nickname to each other. Hey, Struthers.
That's fantastic. So our guest tonight is known to our community and the universe at large as having been seated at the throne as a member of the cult since 2006 and has played with Testament, Exodus, and White Zombie. He's also known as one of the finest rock and roll drummers of his generation and beyond. He's also a three-time Shiprock veteran, 2016, 2017,
yeah,
and 2019. And he's also a two-time All-Star on the legendary Motorhead's Motorboat Cruise. Certainly his greatest single career personal accomplishment is having played Aces High with me, Al McManus, as a member of the Stowaways in 2016. He's also one of the nicest and kindest souls we've had on the ship and always going above and beyond for our guests and community. You can see him perform with the cult on October 27th in San Diego and November 5th in Biloxi, Mississippi, with I'm sure more tour dates to be announced. Ladies and gentlemen, the lovely, the talented, the complex, Mr. John Tempesta.
What's up, guys? Man, good to see you all.
Yeah, man.
Wow, man. I think you forgot 365 day award winner of the sexiest man alive, too.
Right, right.
Are incredible looking. And look at those that can't see. I'm just angry for you. Shirt.
Well, we'll go live to Facebook in about 30 minutes with this, John, and then Pete, the folks will get their full.
Okay, we're not live right now.
No, we're recording for the podcast right now.
Oh, okay,
The whole thing will go into the podcast. Gotcha, but,
okay.
Yeah, so we just hang out here.
Get stuff like that? Can I do that?
Oh,
I have a filthy Bronx mouth.
You know? Fuck yes.
Hey, yeah. Archie.
Yeah. So before we started our little adventure here, you and Chad were comparing dog. You know, it used to be back in the day, you guys would compare like, you know, male genitalia. But as we get older and seasoned,
yeah,
you know, we're comparing dogs these days, man, which is probably the way to go.
Absolutely. Dogs are the best, man. Honestly, like I was telling you guys earlier, every day it's my routine. I wake up at 6 a.m, have my coffee, take the dog to the park. I live up here by the Hollywood sign. There's a great dog park and she has many friends and we socialize and that's how we start our day, man. So it's great.
Her name is Luna. Luna, right? Luna.
Yeah.
How she got a
few nicknames, Luna Fish, you know, Luna, Looney Tunes, you know.
Yeah,
looking right now like
that. Now with a dog, you don't actually want to say lunatic because that would be.
Oh, I do say that too. I don't. But that could, you know, yeah, once in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
She's really.
Yeah, there's a pill for that.
Yeah. She's a cutie, and we were just introducing Carl. My Carlito is a maniac as well.
Carlito,
me. Yeah, yeah.
Great.
He's sticking on my feet right now. Is this your first like dog?
No, I grew up, I had so many dogs in my life. You know, my dad was a hunter. He always had dogs in and out, you know, my older brother would find stray dogs and all of a sudden there's another dog. And oh God, at one point we had dogs, we had cats, there was chickens. There was a turtle at one point. It was insane. It was like a freaking zoo. And this isn't the Bronx, a small house with a small backyard. It's freaking nuts, man.
Back when there were backyards in the Bronx, or is it still, it's been a while since
my mom still has this same house I grew up in, man. Same exact thing. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's same fantastic. Address. So when I go home, I really go home. Never remember going in that house and everything. It's crap now, but still it's home. You know, my mom.
Sure. Owned it,
so, sure. Yeah. And it's the shanty my dad had built. He built a fiberglass shanty in the back, you know, kind of like a storage room. And so that became my drum room. And it's still there. And it's because it's just fiberglass lining, it just made the drums project twice as loud.
Oh, so man.
You can hear me from like three blocks away, man.
Yeah, it's like a drum shield. It's like a drum shield, but all four sides.
Absolutely. And I had a big kit with 26s in there, man. Double bass, Powell style. Dude, it would rumble. It was great.
Who bought you that first kit?
My next door neighbor, actually, this is a great story. My next door neighbor, Charlie Castelluccio,
he might be from the Bronx.
Oh yeah, my next door neighbor. So Charlie is older than me. He's like, you know, the same age as my oldest brother, Lenny. And Charlie now is a NYPD detective. But back then he was a drummer and he was moving on to his next kit. He had a Blue Sparkle, little, you know, shitty, no, you know, a beginner kit, basically, like, you know, a Sears kit, whatnot. And so he was working his way up to another kit, like a bigger setup, one more Tom. So he goes, he knew I was really interested. And my mom would always buy me those, you know, freaking Christmas kits, and I break it in an hour. You know what I mean? I was 7 years old, whatnot. And then Charlie said to my mom, hey, I'll sell you this drum kit for $25. I'm like, whoa. So I begged my mom, you know, please, please, I really want this. And so she gave in, and then we just took the drums right over the ports, right into the basement. And that was it. That's what started it all for me. It was the next day I woke up, it was Sunday. I cleaned the drums. I was putting jewelry on there and everything. And I just always loved the look of a drum kit at first. I seen Ringo Starr in Hard Day's Night. And it just took, it honestly took me until this day. I still have so much passion for drums. I have drums coming out of my ears, man. Seriously, it's great.
Sure.
Do you still have that everywhere. Kit?
I'm sorry?
Do you still have that kit too?
John, I think you probably went from that kit to the next kit, which had the drums that had they were curved, that had the, like the.
Oh, the North. Like, I actually wanted the North kit.
Yeah, everybody wanted those things were the shit, man.
I kicked myself in the butt now because they were blowing them out at the time at Sam Ash and on 48th Street in New York, and about like $700 and like because they were going out of business, and it was I fucking knew I should have bought that kit. They were out there, but I don't, you know what, I could get one, but I honestly don't have the room anymore. Which is not a bad thing. I have so many drums. I have snare drums. I have 50 snare drums in my other room there. And now I decided to kind of collect pedals for some stupid reason. I want to get some old vintage pedals. Why not? Something to do. Especially during the lockdown. What do you buy, you know, to keep yourself busy and amused and, you know what I mean? It's just kind of normal.
Sure. Yeah. Is that what you kind of did? Just back us up and tell us what happened during the lockdown. Obviously, we saw some stuff online that was the cover stuff, which was super fun and awesome. But is that one of the things you did to kind of keep yourself going through the whole thing?
Yeah, I did. And, luckily I have a rolling kit here, the V-drum kit in my room. And I did a bunch of those jam outs, you know, the lockdown jams, which is fun. I did one with Phil Demmel. We did it. And I got my friend Graham Bonnet, you know, from Rainbow and all
saw
that. My brother played guitar on that. So there's a lot of fun. And I did a few of them. I did one for Cherie Curry and stuff like that. Cherie Curry. And, what happened was the band Mother Sister I'm in with Scott Ian and Jim Wilson, his wife Pearl and Joey Vera. We were recording right before the lockdown at 606 Studios, Dave Grohl Studio. And a friend of mine knows someone who works at the governor's office and said, they're going to lock this place down soon. So I gave everybody a warning and everybody's freaking out. Like, I remember I finished early, was running out. I ran to the grocery store and just stocked up, and Scott went to Whole Foods. It didn't happen for like another week, but still, in that panic mode. It's like, oh my God, you know, they're coming for us. You know, the world is coming to an end or whatnot. And I had a lot of fun, to be honest with you. I mean, still, you know, coming off a tour, I'm pretty like I'm pretty private. I'm more of a homebody and stuff, like hanging out. I go to my drum room, I do my thing, and you know, and but it started getting like kind of like, oh shit, man, nothing's open. This sucks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At least go down sure. to a bar and have a drink or see some friends or whatnot.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you mentioned your brother, and I'm sure you've told the story a thousand times in interviews yeah. and that kind of thing. But how was the relationship with your brother when you're growing up? So you're dragging the drum set over the porch from mm-hmm. Vinny Caliuto, I'll call him. He's your neighbor, certainly not. It's just,
it's pretty close. I can't remember. That's Deluccio.
Yeah, that's who I said. And so you're dragging the drums over the porch. And what's your brother doing at that time? Because what's the age difference?
He was young, like 2 years younger. He wasn't into me. I mean, he wasn't playing it. But right. later on, he wanted to play drums. And then he just picked up the guitar, and he picked it up pretty quickly. Like, you know, around 14 years old, I would say, 15 years yeah. old.
Oh, you were a longtime drummer then.
Yeah, I mean, I started.
Hey, you've been playing for, you've been playing for 5-7 years at that point. When you picked
yeah, up. Yeah. And then, yeah, 11, and Charlie Castellucci, Vinny Caliuta guy. Yeah, my first concert. This is a good one. He asked my mom, "Hey, Mimi, I have an extra ticket. I want to take Johnny to the concert." It was David Bowie at the Garden, 1977, dude. So that's my first concert. And the drummer, get this, is Dennis Davis. And we had shitty tickets, but not for me because it was side of stage. And, you know, I seen the drummer and he had the North drums.
There you go. See, it all comes back to those drums, man.
That's why. And Dennis Davis and Matt Cameron from Soundgarden and I, you know, we're good friends, and he had seen that same tour, but in San Diego. So that's gotcha. The same age, and you know, Chris Cornell, you know, all the same age, and we always talk about that concert, man.
That's
crazy.
It's cool, isn't it? I'm on a super deep Bowie kick right now with my kids. And
so, Warren, you want to hear something really? Even this will blow your it blew my freaking socks off, right? So every time I go to New York, I go to 48th Street, right? You know, there was a street, the Mecca stores, all like Manny's Music, Sam Ash. It was Music Row, basically. And anytime I went there, I would go visit and see my friend Marco, who was a manager at the store. So one time, I think we flew out there for Zombie. We're doing a Letterman or something. And I go up the store, and I'm walking around, just checking everything out. And this black dude's walking, and Marco goes, hey, Johnny, you ever meet Dennis? I go, Dennis Davis. I went, dude, you're the first drummer I ever seen. Because of you, this is the reason I'm here and playing yeah. this, you know. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, honestly, you're one of my favorite drummers. And he goes, dude, I know who you are, man. You're killing it out there, blah, blah, blah. And I go, and 2 weeks later, we were playing Roseland in New York, sold out. It was our first Zombie show in New York, Rob Zombie. And that was a big one. So I go back 2 weeks later, the same place, and he's there again. And he goes, I really want to go. And I go to Marco, go, is he serious? He goes, yeah, man. So I put him on the guest list, right? And it's a big deal for me. It's a hometown show. Like, family's there. Tommy Lee and Nikki Sixx and everybody's there. It's a big show. And Roseland was an amazing place. Had the best fucking show. You know, I'm going to kill it. You know, I'm just came off the stage. I'm in the dressing room. I get ready, change. And there's a stairway. You go downstairs, you know, to get out and meet your guests and everything. I open the door. The first guy is Dennis Davis. You ready for this? He goes like this to me. He bows to me. I told the story a million times. I still get the goosebumps, man. And yeah. That was it. I seen him play Madison Square Garden, and that was my goal to do that in my
life. And he turns around and respects you like that. It just blows your mind, doesn't it?
Fucking still does when I think of it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because it's those moments too where you've come so far from them, but you've aged and been through all of those experiences, played all these shows since that day. Yeah. And still those things you go back to and go, that was fucking awesome. You know what I mean? It's like, that's how heavy it is, you know?
And when I tell people this story, they trip out, you know, it's in the book one day, you know, a lot of those cool stories in there.
Yeah. And for a guy like you, it's probably up there with, I would think, that time we played Aces High on Shipwreck.
Dude, I think that was still the best jam. Honestly, we're going to do it again. I think we should do it. One more time.
You guys should literally Groundhog Day that for the rest of your existence. That's what I mean.
I told Nick I played that song too, man.
Did you?
Kick out of it, yeah.
Yeah, it's all Chad. Hey, listen, Chad, if I had my druthers, I would relive that day. That would be my good. Actually, I wouldn't even need it to be a day. I would just need it to be, you know, 3 minutes and 38 seconds or whatever it was.
I would tune in.
Yeah.
We played it pretty fast, too, didn't we?
It was, yeah. So maybe
3 minutes and 15 seconds, probably.
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah, it could have been. Yeah, that was fun. I think we started the show. I think we may have opened.
I think we did.
I think we may have opened the whole thing that night. It was the first song. So I was. It was a lot of fun. So, Ed, you got what do you got on your list, buddy? Because I have like 17 things I want to talk to John about.
Who are you talking to? Chad?
Yeah, Chad.
Oh, I was going to ask you a specific question since we're talking about drums, and this is on my list. So you have your own snare drum, right? The Stealth. You have like 50 something snare drums at your house. Do you have, do you play on your own snare drum?
Pretty often? In this studio, the Mother Sister record, I record on my snare drum. And I bring out like the big one, the Bell Brass Tom in the 80s, the Terminator, you know. But my snare drum, and not saying because it's mine, for some reason, it has all those great characteristics, you know. It has like that wood tone, if I want to get that Alex Van Halen tone, or that high poppy helmet sound. It just, you know, it's very well-rounded, so. And it feels great. And honestly, yeah, I've been playing it forever.
That's even cooler for my follow-up was, so my band, Wilson, that we did our second record.
Great band.
We did our second record in Atlanta, and the producer, we were going through all these fucking snares, all of them. Uh-huh. And like Glow in the Dark Studios is where we're recording the drums at. And he pulls out, he's like, I got this new, at the time, I believe it might've just came out, or maybe even had like an advanced copy. It was like, when did the snare actually come out again? It was like 2010 or 11.
My snare drum?
Yeah.
Good question. Around there, but I actually had the prototype of my snare drum when I was with Helmet, like back in 2005. Oh, okay. We're still going through, like, you know, I had some prototypes, and that's when I really cranked it, you know. So yeah, but well,
I remember the dude saying, "No one's played on this in this studio yet. So like, if you guys want to check it out, see if this works." And Spin Pooey, our drummer, hits it again, and hits it another time. He's like, "This is the one." And we listened to like 20 different playbacks of different snares, and it ended up being the one that we used on the record. So, which is awesome. a funny story to bring up there. Cause I was like, I wonder if he actually uses it like in a consistent basis. Yeah.
Well,
then he loved it so much that the Easy Tune, Easy Drummer, is that what it's called? It's like
the sample track, Easy Drum.
Everything that we demoed on, he also used your kit on.
A lot of guitar players jam with that. It's a great pack. These guys from Sweden, I mean, they're like, you know, and
it's that's your pack is fantastic.
And he's sneak, man, you know, and he's
it's really great. Really, that whole thing, and the Swedish guys, right? You mentioned that, whole thing. I mean, we're complete
that one time.
Yeah, we're completely nerding out on music gear right now, and frankly, I love it. Because I mean, I use all the tune track stuff. I mean, like Easy Mix, hell, I use Easy Bass, Easy Drummer, Easy Keys, all that
easy
stuff.
Easy Bake,
amazing.
Easy Vape.
he's about it.
Easy Chad, Snacks.
Chad, before I forget, didn't we play Thin Lizzy, Boys Are Back in Town, right?
Yeah, which is my favorite band of all time. And I was
me too. It's like, Brian Johnny's one of my idols. Like, the King of Swing, baby. I'm a huge fan. Yeah.
It was probably my crowning, it was probably my favorite thing I've ever done on the ship, even beyond playing with Wilson, because it allowed me to not only feel like all those nights of eating the ramen, you know, even if it's just playing with you for a moment, like eating the ramen, sleeping in the van or whatever, I got to go home from that ship and tell my dad that not only did I play a song by the band that we both love the most as father and son, but also by a drummer with a drummer that we both equally love from different projects. Like, he's a huge cult fan, and I love all your shit. So it was a cool, that was like that little check thing that I got to go back and say, hey dad, check this out.
Thank you. That was fun, dude. Yeah. Stevie was on guitar. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Stevie. He's so good. Such a cool dude too.
Love that kid, man.
So yeah. That was my question about this. Yeah. Let's do it. Do it right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Microphone.
So, John, we've hung out on the ship and played a little bit of music together, and I've followed you and your career and all the bands that you played for. I love. What's your if I could be so bold, what's your personal life like? I'm not sure if you're married or you got kids or what.
No, I'm single, and maybe I'm a loner. I don't know. I'm pretty private, and you know, listen, this is the life I chose, and you know, when
yeah,
it could be a time. It's hard to explain, but you know, when the timing is right, something will happen. I think fate will take its place. But I'm sure. Really where I'm at right now, and you know, this lockdown wasn't easy either. Going out, there was no way to go out. Sure. Kind of mingle and stuff like that. But no, you know what? I have my dog and I have a lot of good friends. I have my niece that's close by and my brother, and you know, life is good, man. And honestly, and I can just get up and go anywhere I want. You know what I mean? Without anybody.
Sure. How did you, maybe it doesn't need to be the abridged version, but how did the Bronx kid wind up in Los Angeles, and where are the key points during your life, both kind of before music was the thing you were doing for a living, it was the Bronx, and then give us the snapshot. How did you make your way there?
It was a fluke, man. Honestly, my buddy Dante, my best friend in New York, we're like, dude, we got to go to LA. It was January. It's freezing cold in New York. You know, I'm like, fuck, the rainbow and the rock. Everything looks so cool. This is like 1985, right? So there was an airline called People's Express, right? It was like $99 each way. This is in the 80s. So we got on the plane. We flew out of Newark, New Jersey, and he brought a bunch of little bottles of Bacardi, you know, and we just hammered the plane. We got this guy next to hammering. So we get off the plane. We had no idea where we were going. We just got on the plane and went to Los Angeles. And it was, like I said, another thing. Fate just took its way, its course. And we get off the airplane, get our luggage. Now this is taxi cabs right in front. There's no Ubers and stuff. We were lucky enough to get this woman, this older woman. Older. She was probably like 10 years old, younger than my
right.
Kid.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, we get in the car. It's like, hey, we want to go on the Sunset Strip. And this is our budget. What's the best place to go? And we were just naive little kids. And she goes, oh, my son's in the band. So she brought us to the Park Sunset Hotel, which is now the Grafton on Sunset. I mean, this is like $75 at the time. So we went there, and get this. There was a Monday night. And it was too late to get a rental car. So we were close to Rainbow. We walked there on the Monday night. It was a rainy night. We go to Rainbow. It's empty. We ordered to have a burger and across from us. So we're sitting in a booth and across from us, we're looking. I go, holy shit, that's fucking Lars and James right there. And Byron Hontis. They were out there mixing Master of Puppets at the time, dude.
Holy shit. So
I went over and go, hey, guys, you know, I'm friends with Anthrax and Lars. Oh, yeah, give this a trolley, blah, blah, blah. And that was it. It was summertime. It was L.A. I was like, oh, there's sunshine and the you know, going to Guitar Center. And it was open. I wasn't, you know, it was clean and going to clubs. And I knew that's where I wanted to be. And basically, that was it. And then I met this girl. It was, just, you know, and that's the reason I moved out to L.A. Then I joined Exit. I was still with Anthrax working for Mr. Tech. And when I went there, and I got the call to tour at Exodus, and that just changed everything right there.
It's crazy. And I hope that I can impart this on my kids, is that sometimes you just have to do things. You just gotta
get up and just do it. Get, you know?
Yeah. So how old were you when you got on that plane?
Shit. 1985.
Okay. So you were 11.
Basically,
we'll go with that.
I was a teenager, man. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the dude from Porky, he was at a hotel. He had the big Cadillac and stuff like that. Just to top it off.
That was real. That's real. You think that, you know, yeah, it's real.
It was real. And I fucking went home that, you know, flying home and met my parents out. It was freezing. I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was like, I don't want to be here anymore. And I started really thought, I need to get out of here. I want to get into my parents' house. And that was a good thing for me, like working with Anthrax and later on, because I was, you know, teching for them. It was kind of trolley-esque. It was like, just hang out with my friends. And he, you know, happened to know a lot about drums. And touring, I always say this, if I do a drum clinic, like the next best thing to playing in the band is a drum tech. I mean, you know, you're there and people have seen you play. And that's what led me to get to Exodus and Testament. They seen me in Soundcheck when Charlie's Kid. And, you know.
And they knew you would work for free.
I got paid. I didn't care. I know.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm going to Europe, and like the first tour I ever did was like with Anthrax, 2 weeks in Europe, opening for Metallica when Jason Newsted got in.
Yeah.
You know, so they had the makeup dates, and then a month later we're going to Japan. I'm getting paid. I'm hanging with my friends. We're having the time of our lives because we're just kids. We're just ball breakers.
Yeah.
And I'm just traveling. I get to play and hang with my friend. It was the best. I never give that up for anything.
I think that it sounds like you're basically doing that same exact thing right now.
You're a little bit older and everything hurts a bit.
Yeah. More. It takes a little longer to warm up.
Like, fuck your wrist. Man.
Yeah.
Frankie Bello and I, we went to high school together.
Yeah.
High school band. Did he tell you that?
He did. We had him on the podcast, what, Chad? Yeah. Episode 35 or something like that. Maybe.
Just say hi to you guys. Yeah. We would jam Iron Maiden songs and like, you know, in the jazz band. Dude,
Is that how the whole intro to being with Charlie and the and drum tech kind of gig came about? Was your friendship with oh no shit.
Yeah. Charlie went to the same school. I met Charlie first. We were a mutual friend, an older friend. Charlie was a couple years older. And we met at this bar, A Man's Castle. Scott Ian gets the biggest laugh of that. A Man's Castle. That was the name.
As opposed to a woman's castle. Like that wasn't a thing.
And so we met, and we just hit it off, and we just had the same interest in music, new wave of, you know, British heavy metal and UK and Terry Bozio. And we were just like, and that was it. We became friends. I think I was 17 years old, you know? And
shit. Yeah. See, I don't think I got that piece of the pie from the Frank from our, I don't think he mentioned that. He said hi. And that, yeah, you know, that as we're, you did this and that together recently.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So it all stems from the neighborhood, essentially.
Absolutely. And I'm so grateful where I grew up. And at the time in the 70s and all the older guys, they all, you know, freaking hot muscle cars and listen to music, playing stickball in the street. You don't get that anymore, man. These kids don't know what it's about.
You know, and hey, you probably feel the way that I do, because I always bring up my kids, but you know, there's that thing where every day that goes by, I sound more like the old man, right? It's like, get off my yard. But here's the thing, as you get older and get this experience and whatever version of wisdom you get, I think the old man was right.
Dude, let me tell you something. And I don't mean to diss anybody. Like, these kids are on YouTube. Yeah. They're amazing. They're blowing it. I go, when I was a kid, I used to have to walk over a mile in the snow.
Of course, well, literally. Yeah.
And I'm not uphill. Okay, this is not, is it the old man story with the, you know, a bag of rocks on the back? It was like, I had to walk to the lesson in the snow, freezing cold. I was probably wearing Capizios because that didn't help anymore. You know what I mean? Van Halen at Capizios.
Of course. You
know? It was cool. It was 1981. So, and going there and taking the lesson, really getting into it and walking all the way back and my fucking, you know, frostbitten toes and everything and pulling out the lesson and studying it instead of going on YouTube and like copying someone, you know? I mean, hey, everybody has their thing, but for me, you know, I earned it. What was that?
My friend was telling me a story the other day about this, and similarly, but it has to do with porn, in that he used to print the pictures out, you know, and he was telling me about, I don't know why he was telling me that, it was actually Al. He was telling me, he's like, yeah, man, I used to print them out all the time. And then I go in the shower, slap it on the fucking shower. I'm like, oh shit. He's like, yeah, these kids these days, they don't know how hard it was just to, you know, just to pull one out to be gross or whatever. And I was like,
yeah,
damn, dude, now that I think about it, it was pretty difficult. Like I had to do all sorts of sneakery back in the day. And then, you know, I didn't have to walk up a hill both ways with Caprizios on to go to McCarlos. But I did have a bike and I had to get Chad, to play guitar.
You rich kids, man, with your bicycle. You know what I mean?
The rich coffee kids. Too. So, you know,
the coffee and the bicycle. Yeah.
Let's do this, Chad. So we got John's story and this might be interesting. We'll go around the room and Chad, you tell your story about what sent you as an artist on your path. Like, cause there's the one moment that kind of changed it. John was like, fuck it. I'm getting on an airplane. I don't know what's going to happen, but this seems like a fun, crazy idea. I'm bored as shit. I got to get out of here. What was yours, Chad?
I had a cousin, who played guitar.
You're right.
Yeah.
And his name's Pete. And he had this, actually the Van Halen PV, I forget the model it was called, it had all the spray paint lines all over it. And it was always hanging in his room. And I wanted to play it so bad, but he would never let me play the guitar. I got to play the Sears and Roebuck one, and I was terrible at it. But then I met a kid. I originally wanted to play the bass guitar, and I met my best friend at the time. His name's Sadat. He and I started our first band in like middle school. He wanted to play guitar. I wanted to play bass. And I was learning how to play guitar on my cousin's guitar. And we just like, funny story is my aunt gave me the guitar. So I never got to play bass. I just had to play guitar. And he got a bass for Christmas or something like that year. And we started playing every day in our neighborhood. I go over to his house, or he would come into my parents' house in the garage. And then he had an older brother, funny enough, we would ride around with him, and he would let us listen to records, CDs, you know, and the CDs he was playing, John, Nine Inch Nails and White Zombie. And wow. Then he took us to go see a White Zombie show. And it was the second show I'd ever been to. The first show I had been to was Black Sabbath with my father. And then
your father's the greatest living human being.
He was dope. He's alive and he's awesome. Okay. His name's Dennis, and he might be listening right now. Hi, Dad. So he took me to my second show. My friend's dad and buddy took us to our second show, your band. And then I went to the following week. I think I went to maybe a Deftones and Limp Bizkit show or something like that. And we were playing in a band.
Where was the zombie show? Was that with Pantera and Deftones?
Correct. Yeah, that's what the show was. That's what the tour was. And it was at, oh my God, it would have been the big amp, the big, not the Palace, but the big amphitheater, Pine. It would have been either Harpo's or Pine Knob. It was one of those two.
Oh,
I saw.
Not
I'm in Detroit.
I was in Detroit. Harpo's. No, we,
yeah.
Did, yeah.
It was Pine Knob, which was called DTE now.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And that, strangely enough, I saw the first show, Sabbath, there too. And then after that, we came back and we started to actually play music and, you know, write our own songs. And we were both in band. I played trombone, he played saxophone. But on lunch break, we would go and use the drum set and plug
it. Do the real shit.
That's, yeah. I love it. I love it.
Small town in Michigan. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, and just music out of Michigan, dude. Detroit Rock City, baby.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, these kids these days, they don't know. And I'm like, they're doing the same thing in the streets that you guys were talking about. It's just like, you know, it's a little bit different. They're just doing burnouts and street racing and like, you know, crazy shit to keep themselves occupied during this.
Absolutely.
And Detroit's probably one of the only places that's just still like, nothing's really changed, you know?
You know, it's cool. Like the local, the Detroit boy, Tommy Clefados, you know, zombie drummer and Black Sabbath drummer. So there you go. You do the concerts. How about that? He's a local crazy boy. Great drummer, man. Yeah.
Anyways, that's my, how about you, Al?
The defining moment was I was in college and I was fairly dissatisfied with college girlfriend problems. And for spring break 96, I spent some time after college playing around in bands and stuff, lived in New York City for about 3.5 hours and realized I could not do the city because I grew up in Hornell, New York, which is 6 hours east of the city. And it's cows, not people. And it was just too overwhelming for me. I completely freaked out. So anyway, I went to college and I was in college and I was just not, I was in a weird curriculum that I wasn't really into. And my buddy had lived in Tennessee and he's like, hey, come down here for spring break and just hang out. So I drove down to Tennessee. That would have been March of 96. And man, I showed up at his house and we went out drinking or whatever. And there was about six friends, kind of like what happened to you, John, but without the kind of the celebrity thing. But even then you didn't really feel like there were celebrities when you're meeting. Right. It's just kind of like, hey, you're cool. And you know, this guy, cool. Let's hang. Well, it was similar to this without any, you know, it wasn't a musical thing. And I plugged in with my buddy and we went out and I literally met five, six guys that I can name their names that wound up being my best friends today.
That's the best.
And so, and that was on spring break. And I left that spring break and I drove home and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Mm-hmm. And so I somehow managed to get through that first part of college, one of the last semesters of college, never finished college because same guy called me. He's like, he worked A&R at Warner Brothers in Nashville. And he called me and he's like, hey, there's a job in the opening in the mailroom. He's like, you got to get down here. He's like, I can get you an interview. I don't know what's going to happen. So I went down, I drove down there on a Saturday on a Tuesday in June, 96, interviewed on a Wednesday, bullshitted my way through it, got hired on Friday, and then drove back to New York State 12 hours, loaded up my 1988 Pontiac Bonneville with everything that would fit in it, drove back down and started work at Warner Brothers Records on the Monday. So it's like, but the defining moment, like that spark where you're like, this is, you know, where it just overwhelms you. You went out there, John, and you're like, this situation, the feeling I get, the sun, the music store.
Oh, I knew it right away.
You knew it. And when I came to Nashville, it was the same exact thing. And from there, I've got 6, 7 of my best friends who are still some of my best friends now from that spring break. And then when I moved here, it was just on. It was like great friendships, like, great times.
As far as like, because Nashville is blown up, like everybody from LA left. That's like, I heard like a friend moved from LA. It was hard to find a house. Like there's no inventory out there, you know?
Yeah. That's the downside of being the it city. Right. I mean, even when I came in 96, people who were there from 92 or 90 were like, man, you wouldn't believe it. It's changed so much. I mean, from but not to me, because that was right. But now the boom really happened in 2002 to right now, where I drive down there probably once a month for a show, for something. Uh-huh. And I'm like, okay, wait, this is church. Okay. This is Church Street. When did that happen? You know, it's bang, bang, bang. It's a lot to take in. I'm not really a big city kind of guy. I'm just a hillbilly. So, you know, John, maybe like you, where it's like the big city's right over here, but I'm going to hang out in my little pocket here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, I'm right here, you know, like, yeah.
I like that. Yeah, yeah. I feel like I'm out because I'm, you know, yeah, I get
yeah,
it.
You, whatever oh, yeah. You use, whatever you use to kind of cocoon yourself. And so you can kind of not feel safe, because I don't feel in danger, but you know, just like what you're comfortable with.
That's right.
But I did live the Nashville city life for a good stretch, and mm-hmm. then got married and we got pregnant and realized it wasn't.
You got so
we're burbs now. Well, this is how adult married people say that the wife got pregnant.
Hey, we got pregnant together because you were there, by the way.
Yeah, I did something.
Yeah, yeah, I did the fun part, and boy, I did the fun part, and then you got to pay for it.
Of course. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
literally. Where you at, Chad?
I'm here in Detroit.
You are in Detroit. Okay.
Yeah, I'm right outside of sitting in Royal Oak. I'm trying to think of it. I'm 2 blocks away from the Royal Oak Music Theater. If you're familiar with the venue, that's downtown okay. here. That's like a 2,000 cap room, right by the zoo.
That's how is it building down there? Because I remember like we played the Fillmore right there, and there's the lofts occurred. There was that bar, and the guy said he owned the whole loft up there, and it looked like an amazing building. I could see the whole place just blowing up. And I remember we played a show out there. They were filming Transformers back then with Mark Wahlberg and stuff.
Oh, yep. Oh shit.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we had the film center there for a while.
It was a big deal.
It was like really cool when they had that film thing going on here, and then it went away, as most cool things do. But I think they actually have plans for them to offer the incentive again in the next year or so. But okay. Downtown Detroit is a whole other thing. I used to live down there in 2008 to 14, I think, or 13s, and it wasn't like anywhere near the cast corridor that, you know, you probably had seen throughout the years, but it was still pretty at that point in time, not quite there. And I was in the neighborhood called Woodbridge, about a block or two away from where you were literally playing last time you were here. And now it's like all of that, the infrastructure you're talking about, it just like tripled in size. They moved the Pistons to downtown. They mm-hmm. got, you know, they have a whole new fucking arena for the Red Wings, all of that. They are all on play underneath the Little Caesars Arena roof. It's crazy there.
Wow.
I lived between here and Los Angeles until the pandemic ended. Well, until August of 2020, but yeah.
Dude, I'll never forget like the first, well, not the first time. The first time actually I played in Detroit was with Exodus. It was a place called Blondie's. It was like
Blondie's.
CGV's, you know, like this sweat box, middle of summer, man. Like, holy shit. Sweating, you know, sweating ceilings and all. But I remember playing Harpo's and Anthrax in 1987 Among the Living Tour, you know, working for them. And like everything was like, you go into a grocery store, it's all shielded up. Like, wow. It's like the Bronx. It was very similar to like what I grew up in. So
In the it still is like that. And where the Harpo's is still that exact sort of terrifying space.
And Harpo's is still happening, right?
I mean, yes and no. This, Eddie, who owned it for years, sold it to the guy who owned Blondie's back then. He was trying right before in 2019 or 18, I believe, trying to like revitalize it because they still had shows, but it was the same. Nothing changed about the interior. You know, the pit there is actually a pit. It's terrifying. And the parking lot is like just full of like memories of death. So he was trying to kind of like make all of that dirty putty and turn it into something that people
dirty
wanted.
Putty.
Dirty know, putty.
Like, look at this. It's not dirt anymore.
I feel like we just named another side project for the three of us.
That's a dirty putty.
Dirty putty. Yeah. So if you guys haven't noticed, we are currently live on Facebook with Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast. We have the lovely, talented, multi-talented and complex John Tempesta here. Everyone knows his resume and we just spent 30 minutes or so just rapping with him about the goings on in the world. And if you want to check out that version of the podcast, that'll be dropping on Monday. So keep a lookout for that. And so here we are. Welcome everyone in Facebook land. Here we are. And I think we've covered it all. So I think that's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
See you guys. Yeah.
That was fun, dude. So we could talk for like another 2 hours, just stories and everything.
I know.
By the way, so you were saying your second concert was Van Halen, right, Chad?
My first concert was. Yes, my second concert was your concert.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so ready for this one, Al? Big Al?
Ready, always.
My second concert after Bowie was Sabbath, with Van Halen opening for Sabbath in 78, Madison Square Garden. Van Halen won, and no one knew who the fuck Van Halen was, right?
Yeah.
I walked in the garden, me and my friends, this funk, we see the bass drums and the gas, we're like, who the fuck? And it so happened that our seat in Loge, in the garden, the light guy would be up there, and it happened to be Pete Angelus, that I realized later on.
Yeah.
So we're talking to him like, hey, you want some weed? I'm like, no. So who is this band? They're from California. I'm like, really? That looks insane. Go, just wait, kids. They went on stage, they fucking smoked Sabbath. So, I mean, we're fucking Sabbath fanatics. I mean, Sabbath was done. It was the last, it was Never Say Die tour, 78, 78, you know? But I honestly never seen any band blow anybody, except for like maybe Pantera or something, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
You know, they would like, you know, you'd be scared to have someone open up like that. So
you might know this better than me, John, but that was kind of the word on the street, was that a lot of bands didn't want to play with Pantera or Van Halen. It's like, you know, it's like, that sounds like a really nice opportunity, but God, we're just going to, I mean,
are you kidding me? I was with Exodus. It was Exodus and Suicidal Tendencies with a co-headlining tour and Pantera's first tour. They opened up. They smoked us every night. Yeah. Suicidal, not so much. But, like, you know, I mean, I'm just being honest. We had some great show. But Pantera, they were kids. They were on fire, man.
Yeah.
It's undeniable. You know what I mean?
They're going
to come out of their little mobile home, you know, their little camp or whatever. They had one of those GMC Airstreams, whatever the fuck they were back then. It's on the first video, if you see it, like, you know, the home videos. They destroyed the thing, but it was great. We had
some and maybe that goes back to our conversation we had earlier that folks can catch up on the podcast, where it's like the grumpy old man thing, right? Because I have a theory on that. I, you know, and living in the concert world and the live music world that I do every day, the bands that really hone their craft live and play. I mean, how many shows you figure Van Halen and Pantera played before anybody even watched them? And that's what it is. Like learning how to play your instrument, standing up under pressure, under lights, and like figuring out that vibe. It takes 5-7 years to even start to get good at that.
Honestly, you know? And it's like Pantera. They were a club band. They played Joe's Garage. And when I rolled through town with Anthrax in 1987, you know, we were friends and I was introduced. I think John Rooney knew Rita and blah, blah, blah. And Scott and Charlie knew her and Dime. And we went to the club with a day off. And me and John, Scott Ian's guitar tech, we went up and we jammed Medusa with Pantera. Vinny.
Yeah.
Sniffing.
Luna, we're live.
Oh,
does she not know that we're live? I mean, that's why
she's up, yeah. World.
Like, what's up? No, she comes up. She's she knows live when she hears it. Yeah.
Who's that, Luna? Who's that,
Luna?
Oh.
Yeah.
Season. Oh, that was it. Oh, okay, I gotta talk. So, and honestly, we jammed and they were so much fun. And these guys, I mean, as a cover band, they played Priest. I'm like, they were scary, man. And this is, you know, then they got their record deal. And I remember I got an advance of the record, and I said to it, I got, this is fucking, this record's amazing. Cowboys from Hell. I heard it for the first time. And that's right. You heard it too.
He was and, guys. Yeah.
And then found out they're touring with us with Exodus and Suicidal. I'm like, oh, dude, my friends. And they just smoked, man. And they just blew up from there, you know?
It's like,
God, I miss those guys, man. Unbelievable. You know, there'll never be another like that.
No, yeah, I know. And Phil,
the Van Halen of, you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, I agree. It was the next phase. It was the next level, if you will, to avoid the pun. Who is there? I was going to ask you, is there, who do you have? Do you pay attention to new music? Who do you like? What's happening? What's the job? You know what, the playlist got these days?
You know, you want to see what's on my playlist? This baby right here, dude, the box set of this.
Yeah.
That's what's on my playlist.
Yeah. Right, well, and I see you've got the whole Macintosh system, the whole deal, right?
Yeah, man, it cranks. Yeah. As a kid, I always wanted a Macintosh. And honestly, it's one of those things. And then I used to go to John Varvatos' store in New York City, which is, you know, used to be CBGB's. And like, I got to have one of these one day. And like, you know, it's Macintosh. You have it for life. But then a friend of mine that I met, and he worked for them. And he kind of like cooked me up, you know, had a nice, pretty good discount, you know?
Yeah.
A discount helps.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sure. Like a car payment right there. So it's okay. But you know, it's something I do every day. It's like, I'm endorsed by all my drum companies. I have a stuff. There's some things you always, you know, you work hard, and like, sometimes you want to buy something nice for yourself. So, you know, it's no guilt in that.
No, totally, yeah, man. You deserve it for sure.
It's got to feel good too. Like to work all your life, you know, and you, like you said, you're now at the spot where you don't have to really think about if you're going to be able to, I mean, in my band, you know, Pooey, our drummer, would be like, dude, can I borrow some money? I don't have enough money to replace the cymbal I broke, you know, until like that happened. That's like an achievement list. But once you don't have to like actually think about the tools that you use besides your body, mm-hmm, be able to spend that earning not on your like actual, because drums are fucking no joke, man. Like,
oh, dude,
I've always felt sorry for him.
But listen, when I was a kid after school, like going with Frankie in high school, I take the train after school. I had early classes and I was a messenger, you know, just walking messenger, and made minimum wage, what, $3.35 an hour or whatever at the time, you know. And I would always go to 48th Street with the music. So every day I wanted messages there, and I would spend a lot of time and seeing what new gear came in. And I saved my money, man. It took a long time to get one cymbal on that wage, but you know, it's amazing. But you know what? Sometimes, you know, pay my dues. I'll tell you that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
That system. I'm just saying, like, being able to like actually take that, like, you know, the transfer of a goods for a service, you know, or whatever it is, like, it's very few times that you're going to ever have to use that, that stock, if you will, towards the job you do, you know? Right. So to be able to actually like afford something that you love with it.
Yeah, it's like Chad, when you were cutting meat at the grocery store, you would just put that meat right down your pant leg as you clocked out.
I was like, I don't need any meat.
Because they knew one side already had the meat in it, and the other side had the new meat in it. You know what I'm saying?
Hello. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a full
meat guy, nice deal. That's
you know what they call that? The French benefits, man. Yeah. So John, you could have been like, well, you were kind of like me, except I had the added caveat of my father ran a music store selling pianos and organs. My dad was a great piano player, still is. Chad still is. And like Dennis is still is. And he was a piano guy, and there was a little guitar section in the store that a buddy of his ran.
Yeah.
And I asked for a guitar for my birthday. He bought me an acoustic guitar, and I was like, Dad, I want an electric guitar, you know, pissing and moaning, because who wants to play the acoustic? And he's like, well, if you learn a Christmas song before Christmas, I'll buy you an electric guitar for Christmas. So I was like, okay. So 45 minutes later, I could play, you know, Jingle Bells. He's like, oh, okay. So he bought me an electric guitar for Christmas. That was a piece of shit. You would have thought that my dad, like, he worked in a music store, he plays jazz piano, like, Dad, like, what are you doing? Yeah, it was a piece of shit. Now, you should have a piece of shit in your first instrument. It's okay,
yeah.
Right?
No, you like, have, yeah.
But I was like, Dad, I've proven to you that I'm in the store, there in the store every day, yanking off to the guitars like every day after school. And you buy me this piece of shit. And the strings are this far off the frets. Like, Dad, what kind of dickhead? If he's listening.
From the back, some guy from the back door just handed to him.
Come on, Dad, just grab just something. But I did what you did. I said, I saved up, man.
Yeah.
I saved up.
And it feels so good. Honestly, when you save and you earn it, you know what I mean? It makes it better. Listen, you know, when you get to a level and like we're talking about endorsements, it's great and the company support you and it's a beautiful thing. And but, you know, when you're a kid, everything is so much different or, you know, you feel a little bit more, you know, when you're younger, maybe years later. And I wouldn't say jaded, but I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that gets involved with that, you know, and, oh, and take this, take that. Oh, thank you. Thank you. But when you buy some, you know what I mean? That's what I'm like, when I buy the system, like, you know, it means a lot to me because, you know, I love music. I love listening to music and why not playing on a good system? So,
yeah, for sure. So what we do,
you know,
we do a little segment on the podcast here on the live section called Walk the Plank.
I take my shirt off. It's no big deal.
I leave my pants on.
That's it.
And we all leave, you know.
Yeah. You see what you do.
So it goes a little something like this. What did you get in trouble for the most when you were young?
Playing my drums. I mean, not with my parents, but like the neighbors and neighbors come. My dad always stuck up for me, and my dad's Italian, Enzo, real strong. Like, are you shut your fucking mouth? I come over, I smack your face. My son that plays the drums, you know what I mean? He's you know, so basically drumming, and then I used to play baseball. I used to break everybody's windows for some reason. Yeah.
Oh wow, you graduated from stickball to baseball, huh?
Yeah, and I was in a little league. They used to call me Johnny Break a Window because I, you know, in the driveway, I just everybody's window, I just break the windows. And it was my mom buying another window. So, yeah.
Do you still have a passion for baseball and sports?
I do. I mean, it was like, it's so weird you say that because I have a Baltimore Orioles hat that I got a guy on the cruise gave to me because my favorite ball player at the time was Brooks Robinson. So that was my number. And I played third base as a kid. And then, so people are like, why are you wearing a Baltimore Orioles hat? You're from the Bronx. I'm like, because I like Brooks Robinson. You know, he's, but I was a Mets fan growing up because my uncle had season tickets for the Mets growing up.
Yeah.
So I would go see them. And then I became friends with Mike Piazza. And I moved back to New York in 99 and 2001. And then,
that was his time right there, man.
Series. He had his own box. I used to go there.
Oh, yeah.
With friends. That was fucking awesome, man.
Yeah, that's amazing, man.
It's funny because did you see that shot after the game? They would take him out because they were already winning. We're in the bar. We're watching the game. He goes, hey, did you see that shot? I'm like, what the fuck are you doing here?
you can leave the stadium during the game?
Oh, yeah, I guess
he could. Like, yeah. I always thought that was really cool. Like when there's the guy, like the athlete guy, right? And he does what he does, and everybody admires that. And everybody's like, oh, whoa, that's crazy, man. How cool is that? You didn't necessarily have a dream to be a professional athlete, a baseball player, but it's like, you know, it's kind of like your idols and that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden they turn around with you and watch you do what you do. And they're like, God, I would love to be able to play an instrument. Right.
That's totally it. Like for me, like I freak out, like, you know, I know a lot of my friends are rock, you know, rock stars and meeting my peers. But if I meet, like, if I was to meet De Niro, so I like shit my pants. So like even my, you know, sports, it's a whole different thing. And you're right. I think they feel the same way. Mike would come to our shows and like, he's so metal out. I can't believe how much metal he was into, like King Diamond and stuff.
Oh,
like
wow. Yeah.
Yeah. He goes, Josh, show me this beat, man. Yeah. I just give him like, you know, a couple drum lessons here and there. It's pretty funny.
Super cool. I remember the Mike Piazza, Roger Clemens showdown was pretty awesome.
I was there at his house because he missed. That was his first All-Star game he missed. And we watched it. We didn't watch it. We just, you know, had the family around at a barbecue. And like, Mike is really chill. He just kept it quiet, but
yeah,
he should have beat his ass though.
Chad, what do you got for Walk the Plank?
Yeah, man. So it's, I want to know, John, if you could take a professional lesson from somebody for any activity other than the drums, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
That's why we call it walking the plank, John.
And so music
could die.
music?
Yeah, you could literally fall into the ocean and be like music. Alive by sharks.
No. Just anything. It could be anything. Literally,
I would say guitar, less than like Eddie Van Halen, you know?
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's a
great, you know, like, I mean, come on, you know?
Yeah, you named the instructor too.
I could also go John Bonham, but I just, you know, something different, you know, if, you know, why not?
Yeah.
Guitar. Yeah.
Eddie Van Halen.
Like proper lesson too. Like, you know, like the, I picture you with the book, just walked up the hill, you know, with your guitar
in your boot. Done.
Guy Caprice, he's there. Yeah. You show up a little early, you know, he's going to be late because every guitar lesson I ever took, he was there 20 minutes late. And I had an hour and I only got 40 minutes, but I didn't dare say a motherfucking word about that shit. I gave him my $25 and left. But during that 25 minutes or 45 minutes or whatever, it was my time to just watch this guy and ask questions.
Yeah, right? That's it.
Yeah.
That's it, man. Could you imagine?
Fuck no, I can't.
Yeah. Well, there's some of those out there, John, you might be interested in that. Speaking of Randy Rhoads, there's a couple of those out there. There was this guy that took a bunch of lessons from Randy Rhoads and he recorded them all.
Oh, really?
And he has some of the, like the photos of the, like the music and the notes that Randy wrote out for him. It's super cool. I'm sure you can just, you know, search
Randy Rhoads. Dude, I met Randy in 1981 at the Palladium in New York.
No way.
Blizzard of Oz. And I'll make this really quick.
Don't make it long. I don't care.
Motorhead opened up for them. It was Ace of Spades, their first tour. It was at Blizzard of Oz, I believe, was the second concert of the tour. They did two nights. I cut out of school. Luckily, my parents were on vacation in Hawaii because I could never get away with this shit, you know? So I won't get into mostly, but me and my friends cut out of school. At the last class, we went down and there was a side door, a stage door that you would meet, like, you know, that everybody has to go through that door. And that, yes, we met Iron Maiden, Judas Priest. And so Randy came in a limo and said hi to him, and Tommy Aldridge and Lemmy, Filthy Phil. And anyhow, we snuck up, we had shitty seats, first row, and banging on Lemmy's boots. It's just, you know, it's insane. And I seen Ozzy fucking, I was eighth row and watching Randy Rhoads, like Revelation Mother Earth. I was like, honestly, I seen Van Halen, right? You know, I seen Eddie in the, like, and then I seen Randy, I was like, fuck. And then after that night, the summertime, we kept going. We found out where Ozzy was staying, Plaza Hotel. We went to Max's Kansas City. It was still open. We walked all the way from 14th Street to 59th Central, you know, Plaza Hotel, summertime. We see Ozzy's bus out there. And knock, I was like, is Ozzy here? We're little stupid kids, you know? Like, oh, no, he's right here. So we go back. We're in the park, Central Park, which is freaking out because this is the most amazing concert we ever seen, right? They did two shows that night. The second show, they played No Bone Movies. And out of nowhere, it's like 7 a.m, the sun's not even coming up. Out of nowhere, fucking Ozzy comes out of the park walking with Sharon. I'm like, what the fuck? Hey, guys. We're like, it's fucking Ozzy. he walks over. He goes to the bus. The bus driver said, oh, these kids are cool. He goes in the hotel. 10 minutes later, Sharon comes out, whistles, come on over. I get up. We're like, who the fuck are they whistling at? There's nobody around. It's just us in the park, right? It's black. Get up. I'm freaking out. I start running. My friend says, oh, chill out. Dude, we got to keep this really cool. Keep it fucking cool. So we go up to Ozzy and Sharon. Hey, guys, would you like to have breakfast with us? It's 7 a.m. on a fucking Sunday. On a Sunday, 7 a.m. Because we have
the Sabbath, no pun.
Until we sit down, Ozzy goes, bring us a bottle of your best champagne. So sorry, sir, we can't serve any alcohol. He's like, fucking bullshit. Well, bring me some beers then. It's like, no, we can't serve anything. It's like, fuck, you know? So anyway, Ozzy goes, I'm going to go to my room. I'm going to do a bump or whatever. Oh, you want to hit a new record? So, and we're sitting with Sharon, we're like scared kids and we can't even eat our food, you know? So he comes back down with the tape. Hey guys, let's go to the tour bus. Puts on the fucking tape. I'm sitting next to Ozzy. This is an old Florida coach. It's the same bus that, you know, that was Randy was in. They were all, you know, the brown bus. And Ozzy's sitting, you know, right across from me. He's whacked out of his head, you know? And he puts on the tape, it's Diary of Madman before it came out. So we just seen two concerts of Blizzard of Oz. And all of a sudden I hear Over the Mountain. And we're like, and we're just looking at each other. Is this fucking happening? Ozzy gives us a beer, like, say, it's 8 a.m. Like, listen to fucking the whole record. And like, no one's ever going to believe this. So afterwards, We were going to school, I think, the next day. It was a Monday. Like, no one's going to believe us. So he gave us passes and signed it. And I still have it in the tour book and everything, too. So.
That's amazing.
It's so amazing how that works out. As a kid, like I said, I was in high school. And touring with Zombie, like playing Ozfest. And then as far as Charlie's Tech and the Anthrax opened for Ozzy. And when I said that to Sharon, I go, hey, Sharon, remember me? It was 1988, No Rest for the Wicked tour. She goes, oh my God, you were just a baby.
Yeah, and speaking of which, when you said no one would believe you, Sharon probably didn't believe you either.
Oh my God. And she had me tell the story to all the wives, Geezer Butler's wife and everything. And like, I had to leave a lot of stuff out, but yeah.
So, but John, that's the thing you carried that with you, because unless you have that thing where you're true fan and you're hunting that stuff down, now where you are, it's like when you see fans and you see fans of a band, it's like there's an understanding, no matter how far long ago it was, there's an understanding there. And if you don't have that understanding, it can make you a pretty jaded person, right?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And just watch the whole fact that them inviting us over for breakfast, you know what I mean? There's those little things, man, little things. We came like, listen to, and before anybody heard that record, kids in high school. And he put in the Metal Hammer magazine. He talked about the whole story of it. And Charlie actually has that magazine, which I need to fucking hunt down somehow. Yeah.
Wow.
It's got to be online somewhere. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have two more fan questions. I have one more question from me and then another fan question for Walk the Plank here. Speaking of No Bone Movies and Over the Mountain and all those songs, right? What song is it, if you had to pick one, that evokes the strongest emotions from you? It's the most emotional response. Any song that elicits the biggest emotional response.
From my playing,
any song that you listen to, it could be the Beach Boys
I'd have to say that one right there.
That's the one.
Can you see that rainbow?
Yeah.
Stargazer.
Oh yeah.
Cozy Powell. Stargazer. That's one of my favorite. As a kid, I had to do a whole story on the song and everything. But
really,
it's the way this song starts with Cozy is one of the best drum fills ever. And it's like, and Leo's vocals and the fucking Ritchie Blood, the lead and just like the keyboard. It's like, it's a perfect fucking song. It's a long song. And I think just the arrangements, it's just perfect, man. I mean, it's got it all, you know?
It's interesting because people like my kids will ask me like, what's your favorite song? And I find the question to be so silly, right? Cause it's so like, are you kidding me?
A million songs.
But we asked John Tempesta and he goes, oh yeah, I got it.
It's definitely it's right here.
It's just interesting. It's just, that's really interesting. You could come up with one. If someone asked me, I'd be like, and then 30 seconds later, I'd be like, no, man, maybe it's not my favorite, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, there's a million song records, but that one always just, you know, it's been it for me as a kid.
Okay. Here's the last question. I'm going to take one from Karen.
Karen,
if you never had to sleep again, what would you do with the extra hours?
Go on Shiprock.
Wow. Just put a bottle cap right on that fucking soda.
Ladies and gentlemen, and that is called a transition, ladies and gentlemen, right there. Man. That is a segue of champions. So let's do talk about Shiprocked and your experience there. Obviously, you know, this is the Shiprock podcast, but we're always out there, you know, any music fan that wants to tune in. But you know, we get a lot of our podcast friends and family are Shiprocked folks. And so tell us, you know, give us your impression of the people of Shiprocked and your best memories on Shiprocked.
Everybody's just so cool and chill. I mean, cause I've talked to band members, like, are you going to have those fans like come up and bug you all the time? I'm like, no, it's not like that at all. Everybody's just having a good time. Cause it is a vacation. I mean, it's amazing. And there's everywhere you turn, there's a band playing here and there, outside the deck, inside, and you get off the boat, you have all these like, you know, things to do on. I went pretty much everywhere, right? The Bahamas, to Key West, to Mexico, Turks and Caicos, right? That was cool.
Yeah. Yeah, 16, 17, and 19 you were on. Wow. So And I've done so many, I can't remember what.
I was the first time I've been on the cruise, just flying because, you know, living in Los Angeles, doing a whole flight back with the sea legs, man. Like,
Yeah. You know what always gets me is the first shower you take once you get back to your normal shower and you put your head in and you're kind of washing your hair and you're like, whoa, holy shit.
Oh,
you kind of run into the walls and
But I always have a blast because I keep doing it. I can't wait to do it again, man.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Karen, thank you for the Karen, thank you for the question. We appreciate that.
Thank you, Karen.
Very much. Well, we are running up to the 8 o'clock hour here, ladies and gentlemen. And we'd like to thanks to John, obviously, for joining us tonight. We appreciate it very much. And it's great to catch up with you, John. You know, we just see each other so briefly. And thank you. I guess it was before. It was in not early 20. You were kind enough to sign a drumhead for a drummer friend of mine who was battling ALS, and it was a fundraiser, and you got that to me right away, and that went to a great cause. So thank you so much for that. Right. Really appreciate it. And I feel like we've covered every single topic we could discuss.
I got one real quick.
Yeah,
I heard that you might have a record coming out. Has the cult started recording something?
Or yeah, there's been a process. Billy's been in the UK. And the producer for the next record is Tom Delgetty, a great producer. He did a lot of the last couple of Ghost records and, you know.
Incredible.
He's in a bunch of bands, but he's great. So Billy worked on stuff and Ian's working on lyrics, but, you know, because obviously the pandemic, we haven't had a chance to all get together. Our last show was in December of 2019. So our first show will be October 27th in San Diego. Almost 2 years, man. That's a long
time.
Yeah. Want to check in progress and see if you know everybody that's listening.
Yeah.
What's going on.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Chad. Yeah. What are you going to do to get? I mean, look, it's 2 years, right? I mean, you've been playing around the house. You got your electronic drum kit. Uh-huh. I mean, you're going to have.
I actually have a gig I'm doing in 2 weeks that I can't really talk about.
Okay. Thanks for mentioning it then.
Totally.
Yeah, I just want to give you. You'll probably read about it somewhere.
Okay. All right. So we knew about it first, kind of. We kind of knew about it first.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's kind of exciting.
So October, right? So are there a couple things in between to keep you fresh? Because, you know, we talked earlier on the podcast where it's like, boy, you get older and, you know, warming up might take a little bit longer. How do you
about that? I try to play every day and go to my drum room and, you know, but we'll see what this thing I'm doing in a couple of weeks. It could lead to something up until that point. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Cool. I can't wait to keep my, we will keep our ears to the, cement.
Yeah, the cement.
We say cement.
Soundtrack.
Cement. It's like the Bronx. Cement.
Cement. Yeah, cement. Yeah, but that's real in the South here. It's cement. It is absolutely cement. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Cement. Well, cool.
Cement earlier, so that's why I brought it up.
Yeah. I mean, they call that a callback, right? Yeah. Well, hey, Shiprock family, thank you so much for tuning in and checking us out here. The full episode of this lovely nonsense will be appearing on the internet where you get your podcasts and YouTube on Monday at 8 a.m. Central. Please remember to go out there and tell the world about our podcast. Help us spread the word. We appreciate you very much, your support. And if you do so, help out everyone. It makes you immune to any STD. It helps increase your liver function and just lowers your bad cholesterol from what I'm reading here. So thank you so much for your support. And thank you to Chad for being here with us. Thank you, Chad, for holding my hand as I tried to fill in for the young and talented Justin Press. Hopefully I did a good job holding his seat down for the day. Thank you to Jennifer Zito, our show engineer, who's out traveling with some form of man right now. So she's not with us tonight. She's usually in the background helping us out. Heather Smith, our show coordinator, and obviously our esteemed captain, Alan Koenig, without whom none of this would be possible. And Alan sends his very best.
Hi, Alan. You.
We would like to remind everyone to rock hard and vacation harder. We will see you on the ship. And John, thanks again, man. Really appreciate it. Great to see you.
A lot of fun, man. Definitely.
Good. I'm glad. Thank you. Chad, good night, my friend.
Hey, good night, everybody. Carl says good night. Good night to Luna.
Yeah, let's have one good night kiss from Carl and Luna. Come on. You got to do this. Good. There we go.
Oh yeah, look at your look at.
See y'all. Be good. See you guys.
Sorry, guys. Have a good one.
Hey, you. Did you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends, Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.